Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the ID the Future podcast. This is Casey Luskin, broadcasting with the Center for Science and Culture from Seattle, Washington. Today I'm going to talk about a lecture that I gave at Boise State University titled The Positive Case for Intelligent Design. This lecture was given on March 19th, and before the end of this, we're going to hear a short clip from the lecture. Boise State University is the notorious home of their beloved, undefeated, but yet number 5 ranked Bronco football team, and I learned when visiting Boise just how much they love their football team. My lecture, however, was not sponsored by the football team. It was sponsored by the Boise State University Idea Club, and the club's leader actually reports that he's recently received some unfriendly emails from a hostile Darwinist. The leader responded nicely saying, quote, "I hope that you will be willing to come to Casey Luskin's lecture." And then he also defended himself saying, quote, "I am quite content for someone to disagree with my view, but I do not respect those that resort to ad hominem attacks against my intelligence, ignorance, etc. Please come and check it out," unquote. Well, the Darwinist had written him that he, quote, "apologizes for the lack of courtesy," unquote, and in reply to the invitation said, "I appreciate the invite for the presentation, but I will abstain." So, unfortunately, the Darwinist decided not to show up to this lecture, but let's listen to a clip that's about 8 minutes long from the lecture.
I work very closely at the Discovery Institute, seeing a good percentage of every news article that comes across the wire on intelligent design, and I can tell you that the news media is notorious for defining it very, very badly. So what do you think? I want to ask a survey based upon what your experience with intelligent design is. So what do you think intelligent design is? A, and obviously I'm probably, you know, going to lead you in a certain direction. I'll acknowledge that. But I'd like to know, you know, coming into this talk today, honestly, and this, I'm not trying to judge anyone. People who are strong supporters of intelligent design often get it wrong. So I'd just like to know, what do you think intelligent design is? Is it A, that life is so complex that it cannot have evolved, therefore it was designed by a supernatural being? Or B, many features of nature are best explained by an intelligent cause because in our experience, intelligence is the sole cause of their informational properties. I'd just like to know, a show of hands, A or B. How many of you would have thought it was A coming in today? Okay, fair enough. How about B? How many of you would have thought it was B coming in today? Okay, that's pretty good. We're about 50-50, and you know, it's okay, whatever you chose here. The media often takes definition A. So if you think it's A, that probably means that you read newspapers, and there's nothing wrong with that. You're an informed citizen, or if you read the newspapers, then maybe you're a misinformed citizen. But the definition B is a definition that, you know, when I talk to the media, I give them every time, and they don't print. So definition B is the one that's on, it's very close to the one that's on the Discovery Institute's website. It's very close to the one that's in a lot of the intelligent design literature. But it's not the one that's in the media. And most certainly, definition A is the one that's promoted by our critics all the time. So let's talk about this. Why is definition B the right answer? Many features of nature are best explained by an intelligent cause because in our experience, intelligence is the sole cause of their informational properties. What the heck does that mean? And why is that important? Well, let's first talk about some examples of intelligent design. Just to give you guys some ideas, when I'm talking about intelligent design, what am I thinking of here? First of all, I'm talking about encoded information. We know in our experience that intelligence produces encoded information. We have in our DNA an incredible amount of encoded information. As a matter of fact, our good friend Bill Gates, who is from my hometown, says that human DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software ever created. So when we see DNA, we see a system of commands and codes and digitally encoded information. If your laptop is anything like mine, you probably see these blue screens of death all the time. I'm not joking. I would not recommend buying a Sony Vaio. That's my little plug here against Sony Vaio. So buy anything but a Vaio. But Bill Gates has compared human DNA to a computer program because there are so many similarities. We see encoded information in our DNA. And in our experience, as we'll talk about as we go on through the talk, information comes from a mind, especially when you talk about certain types of information that has to be specified to a certain language, such as what we see in computer programs, where how many of you guys have any experience programming computers in here? I know even if you're not a computer science major these days, you're going to have to use some kind of computer program in your, in any science major, you're going to use MATLAB, or you're going to use some kind of computer program in your assignments. And so we know that if you use the wrong command, if you just simply misspell something, you're going to crash out your program. You won't either it won't compile or it'll give you the wrong answer. So we see the same kind of system and process going on in DNA. What we see in DNA also is this system that converts the information in our DNA to a physical reality. The information in the DNA, it doesn't have to be, you know, in an abstract sense, it does not have to be encoded in a system of A's, T's, C's, and G nucleotide bases. You could imagine other chemicals being used to encode our bodies. You could imagine a whole different system other than DNA being used to carry this information. But it is encoded in a system of nucleotide bases, adenine, cytosine, guanine, and thymine, which code for that information. Somehow that information has to be transferred, or as we say in biology, has to be translated and transcribed into some kind of a real biological structure, which in our case would be proteins. That's done through a system of commands and codes, which again, we get back to the computer analogy of a computer using commands and codes, and so does our biology use commands and codes to convert DNA into protein. And actually, Richard Dawkins, a very well-known proponent of Darwinism, and these days he's more becoming famous for his campaign against religion, but he is a very well-known, eminent evolutionary biologist in his own right. He says that the machine code of genes is uncannily computer-like. Apart from differences in jargon, the pages of a molecular biology journal might be interchanged with those of a computer engineering journal. That's a very profound statement, because what it says is that there's a lot of similarities between the system of commands and codes that we see in computers and what we see in biology. We recognize a very strong similarity there. So what are the protein structures that are produced when our DNA uses this language to transfer the information that it encodes into some kind of a biological physical form? Well, what we find is that in many cases, the actual biological structures that are produced are machines. And in this case, we have a very good example. If you're familiar with ID literature, you know that the bacterial flagellar motor has become the icon or the poster child of intelligent design. But this motor is a microscopic motor on the nanoscale that's really functions like a propeller on the back of bacteria to propel it through some kind of a liquid medium. Bacterial flagellum, it actually is designed very similar to a rotary engine. Any of you guys car buffs, what's the car that has very well known for having a rotary engine these days? Anybody? Mazda RX-7 or RX-8. I wish I could afford one. They're very cool cars. Also, probably less well known is that if you drive a motorboat, like a whaler that uses an outboard engine, chances are pretty good that they also use a rotary engine. And so rotary engines, you know, were designed by humans before we had opened up the world of microbiology to see how these structures worked. And we find out that they work just like human-designed rotary motors in that they have a rotor, this thing that spins. They have a stator, which keeps the whole system in place. They have a drive shaft. They have a U-joint. They have a propeller. And they have this motor, which uses a proton motor force, and in many respects is designed and functions very similar to a human-designed rotary engine. And this is not the only example of a rotary engine in biology. We actually have another rotary engine in actually every living organism uses the ATP synthase motor to basically produce ATP, which is the energy molecule that our bodies use to drive many biological pathways forward. And this is a rotary engine that spins. I was just reading an article published in Nature a few days ago that said that this machine operates at close to 100% energetic efficiency. Pretty darn good, especially when you consider that us humans have been trying to perfect machines for years, and we're not anywhere close to that. Just to give you some more statistics on the flagellum, it uses somewhere around 50 biological parts. It can spin up to 100,000 RPM. Can stop in a quarter of a turn and reverse direction. So Ford Motor Company should be taking notes on this. This is pretty good. You're not going to see any human-designed engine come even close to this kind of efficiency. And I was actually just reading something that said that if the same kind of engine were propelling, you know, something analogous to, you know, size of objects that we have in the human realm, it would easily cause that structure to break the sound barrier. So we're really talking about some really amazing micro machines. So what we see in biology is encoded information that is then transformed through a system of commands and codes that really are like a language that then produce machines that are far efficient than any human-designed machine. So we see all throughout the biological realm really very close similarities to what we see in the human-designed realm. Information, language, machines. These are things which in our experience only come from intelligent design. And so that's why we say that there's a positive, this is just sort of a basic sense of what is the positive case for design. We see in biology structures which have the same informational properties as those which we find in the human design realm.
So that was a clip from my lecture titled A Positive Case for Intelligent Design, given at Boise State University on March 19th. After giving these excerpts, all I can say is that it's the Darwinist loss for not attending. And that's not because my lecture was any good, but because it's vital to listen and learn from those you disagree with. That's why I spent many dozens of hours sitting in courses covering evolutionary biology during my undergraduate and graduate studies at UCSD. Whether you're a Darwinist or an ID proponent, I recommend taking every opportunity you can to learn more about what your opponents believe. From my experience as an ID proponent, doing this has only strengthened my scientific support for intelligent design, and also more importantly, it has taught me patience, tolerance, and a sincere desire for friendship towards those who disagree with my viewpoint. We'll have some more on this issue and this discussion at Boise State University on Evolution News and Views at evolutionnews.org in the coming days. Thanks for listening. This is Casey Luskin signing off for the ID the Future podcast.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.